In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Many whistleblowers have come forward exposing the corporate media cover-up of those injured by COVID injections, known initially as experimental gene therapy shots. It's been reported 12 billion shots worldwide and 600 million shots in the United States have been administered. These injections are not only experimental, but some were known to be prepared before the engineered pandemic was announced. I believe there is a consensus of people across sectors of society who've realized there is a multi-tiered depopulation operation in full deployment. We've gone in depth with how this is carried out in the interview with Carissa Conti on her essay titled Conspiracies in the Workplace, a Microcosm of the Greater World Matrix. Making the news recently, studies and research papers have been published documenting injuries caused by the injections, such as fatal blood clots, menstrual pathology, cardiac arrest, myocarditis, and cancer. Past guest, investigative journalist Miriam Heinen, has written extensively about the case of Professor Charles Lieber and the implications of his work into nanotech implants and his work at Wuhan University developing nanosensors for human organs. When talking about the future of mRNA shots, Bill Gates is quoted saying, "We just need to mess around. There's a lot of lipid nanoparticles, and some are very self-assembling." There are patents filed explaining self-assembled nanoparticles that are programmable in the therapeutic synthetic mRNA. The nanoparticles can also be programmed to have the host contract one or more of a long list of pathogens. Our guest, Dr. Nicholas Corin, calls this a declaration of war on human blood. He recently published a short article on his Substack page titled Alien Interference, Unexplained Phenomena. In it, he looks at the work of the late Dr. Roger Lear, who performed numerous surgical removals of implants in those who have had an alien abduction. Dr. Corin points out how Dr. Lear's observation of the self-assembling nanocircuitry are similar to those discovered in the COVID injections. We start there and further explore Dr. Corin's article titled Blood Wars. Dr. Nicholas Corin has earned degrees in literature and languages. He has conducted research into Renaissance art and philosophy and later completed his doctorate in Oriental and alternative medicine. For 20 years, he ran a clinic in the Pacific Northwest where he patented his own techniques. Dr. Corin, welcome to Another News.
Oh, that's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Some listeners may have recently heard Bill Gates talk about how the contents of mRNA contain self-assembling lipid nanoparticles. These are nanoparticles assembling in the human bloodstream. Putting another frame of context on this type of nanotechnology, on this show, Miriam Heinen, the investigative journalist, talked about her research into Dr. Charles Lieber's work in Wuhan, China, developing nanosensor implants attaching to human organs. Dr. Lieber has connections with programs that had access to reverse-engineered alien technology, according to Josh Reed, another investigator. Dr. Corin, you had recently written an article on your Substack titled Alien Interference, describing parallels with what California podiatrist Dr. Roger Lear found in implants removed from people who had experiences with alien abduction and the self-assembling nanotech known to be contained in certain COVID injections. Would you please talk about those parallels?
Certainly. First, let me say that, just a little history, that when I started looking into the content of the vials forensically and started researching internationally as to what was being found, my first contact with meaningful research was in Spain, and that was with La Quinta Columna. And they, Ricardo Delgado and José Luis Sevillano, they were the first team that were actually investigating the content of the vials, and they were the ones who were determining the presence of graphene and graphinated nanostructures and the coalescence and self-assemblage of these structures into what has now become clear to researchers in many, many countries. And that's how I started my understanding, if you like, of and further research into the mechanisms for this covert process of creating a liquid neural interface via the inoculations in vivo. Now, just to fast forward a little bit, since time is limited, it was my involvement, not active but passive, as a passive member who was making commentaries but wasn't directly involved in any of those investigations, through the Spanish adjunct groups, chat groups, etc., that what I learned, the direction which eventually Ricardo and José Luis Sevillano went, was towards the question, who is behind all of this ultimately? And the direction they went into, interestingly, was from sort of a, Delgado's a biostatistician, Sevillano's is a family doctor. What they went into was from a scientific perspective into an occult, metaphysical perspective, where they became totally convinced that the hidden hand behind all of this was what they call Ellos, which in Spanish that means they, and is also referred to as Los Bichos, which means the bugs. I'm just going to sort of make a little synopsis of this. What they became convinced of through all the scientific and anthropological explorations that they did, and that's where I actually learned first about Roger Leia through that Spanish group. I'd never heard of Leia before. Was that there's some type of a non-human covert hand that's dominating, you know, the cult, the Masonic secret societies, etc., the so-called elites. And that's the conclusion that they came to. So it's in that respect that I sort of got to consider that, because when I was younger, because I grew up in the UK, I had a lot of exposure there to the occult, in the sense of, you know, things like black dogs coming and massacring all the sheep at night, and witchcraft and those types of things that are still extant, even before the sort of recent proliferation of Satanism with the transgender movement. Those things have been going on forever in UK and in some of the countries. And so, you know, the reports about the surgical excisions of parts of the mouths of sheep and around the genitalia of cows in Texas, presumably by the Greys, in recent times kind of struck a chord with what the Spanish team were talking about in terms of alien interference. So in that particular post, I wasn't drawing any conclusions. I was only specifically referring to one or two points, which we can go into if you like. Just to say about the self-assemblage, because I can talk at length about what self-assemblage is scientifically speaking, because it's a very fundamental question to consider, not just in the case of nanotechnology, but in the case of biology. But with Leia, I know you sent me an email about that, whether there actually was self-assemblage. What Leia said in a speech that I watched on in a video was that when he extracted those implants from the feet of those patients, the material crumbled, it disintegrated in the extraction process, in the excision process. And he was surprised that when he put it in the vials, the crumbled components, it reassembled into a kind of a coherent structure. It kind of, if you like, rebounded from an entropic state to an organized state. I think that's a good place to start, because We're talking here about the second law of thermodynamics, right? That any spontaneous process adds to entropy, meaning that, you know, if something has an order to it, and then that is somehow interfered with, then it becomes disordered or entropic. So we're kind of seeing what's called negentropy. Negentropy means like order coming back, and that's something that a human cell has, living cells have. So I think, you know, one good place maybe to go into, I really like to go into, is the concept of artificial intelligence. People are talking about that concept of artificial life is really, I think, what is going on with all of this agenda, and the correlation and integration of artificial intelligence and artificial life. They're two sides of the same coin. I think that may be helpful to people. Okay, we have artificial intelligence, some people say alien intelligence, AI, artificial life, some people say alien. You know, the A could stand for alien or artificial, but artificial intelligence, artificial life, they're really extremely symbiotic phenomena.
I'm glad that you had drawn those parallels in that article. And yeah, I'd like to talk a little more about some of these ideas and the parallels and the reassembling of these nanoparticles, even the objects within the implant material. I think you made an implication in one of your articles, I think it was Blood War, that suggested that the energy is actually being taken from the human body to self-assemble. Is that also in this idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you're talking about the... Okay, so one question is, how do you make AI? And how do you make AL, artificial life? Right? So how do you generate AI? And how does AI in the body generate artificial life from artificial cells, artificial structures? So the one is the generative process, and then the other is a sustaining maintenance process. It's the same with the human cell. How is this human cell made? Comes, you know, from a stem cell, which comes from the bone marrow. Then it differentiates into a liver cell or whatever. And how does it sustain itself? Why? What energy does it need? So anything living needs metabolism, chemical metabolism, to draw nourishment into it, but also electromagnetic energy. Except for a virus, it doesn't have a metabolism. So you're asking me about, okay, so when this stuff is inside the body and it's kind of growing in there, what's called metamaterials, all these nano components and synthetic components, and they're growing in there, right? Yes, they need energy to grow. And they take that energy from the person. And that energy is metabolic, actually, meaning that they manipulate the genome to produce proteins, for example, and fats, for example, which they extract, like from a mine, or they, if you like, steal it. And then they also need electromagnetic energy, thermal energy, kinetic energy, photonic energy, electrical energy, that the body's producing at a cellular level. And they basically steal that, they appropriate that, and that's used to drive the WBAN, right? The what whole body area network, the biosensors, nanosensors, and then the circuitry, the routers. And then that data is harvested, and then that is sent into the biofield as a frequency. The cloud, if you like, around the human. It's like a cloud of informational frequency. And that then is read and stored at this, you know, sent to the CubeSat and read and stored in the server. And then that information is from the server used to manipulate the digital twin of the person. Because all that data that the WBAN is dispatching, is emitting, is used to create a digital twin. If you like, in a parallel universe, in a virtual universe, everybody now has this digital alter ego or alter physiology, which then can be manipulated via a computer, and that will then resonate with the organic physical person. But the energy for all of this to run this whole stupid machine, if you like, that's taken so is stolen from us at a biological, biophysical level.
I see.
It's not like you're not to. That we are the battery, like in the Matrix. We're the battery to run the takeover technology that's been surreptitiously put inside us, and then it uses us to run it. It uses our own metabolic energy and our electromagnetic energy to run itself. We become the slave battery for the thing that's basically devouring our consciousness and eating our brain and making us into a virtual being. That's what's so horrific about the whole concept.
Dr. Korn, would you talk more about the properties of hydrogel and graphene and how this autoassemblage technology works, for example?
Okay, I'm going to try to make it comprehensible because a lot of this stuff is a little bit exotic science and involves quantum electrodynamics, and it's way beyond the pay grade of most people, myself included, because QED, quantum electrodynamics, is the most incomprehensible subject known to man, according to the person who invented it, which was a guy named Feynman, American physicist, who said, "None of my students understand quantum electrodynamics because I don't even understand it, and I'm the godfather of QED." But QED is used with hydrogels and quantum dots to generate these nanostructures. So I'll try to explain it. So hydrogel is a substance that is a polymer network. Polymer is a macromolecule, meaning it's a long, big, connected structure of different atoms with repeat patterns in it. And a monomer is a single pattern, and graphene is a monomer. It's just composed of carbon atoms in a two-dimensional lattice. So hydrogel, okay, let me just say that it's used in tissue engineering for medical purposes and regenerative medicine. It's used actually in wastewater treatment, but it's used in what's called soft robotics. Soft robotics is basically artificial mechanisms that can go inside at a cellular level, drape around cells. Instead of cutting them and splicing them, they kind of wrap around them like a jellyfish and induce changes through soft manipulations of the tissue. Okay? It's a weird substance in the sense that it's synthetic, but it can bulk up or pulp up, and then it can shrink down because it's kind of able to absorb and emit a lot of hydration, a lot of water. And because its structure is kind of, it's cross-linked, but it's kind of also very flexible and loose. It's like a flexible three-dimensional mesh, gluey, gelatinous mesh. So it's very usable in many different interior environments. And what it can do, it can influence liquid crystalline transitory states in the body and direct them towards certain end results, certain end goals. Right? So it's something very elastic. It can swell up. It can kind of morph between more solid and more liquid. And it can be of different types of molecular complexity. So it's very much like a old Greek god Proteus, you know, that can change shape, be this, be that. It's got this kind of mythological quality to it. It's able also to hold inside of it graphene and quantum dots. And if you like, the beginning components for these nanocircuitries that will then self-assemble inside the body. So in other words, if you think about it like a kelp forest, and inside that kelp forest is a bunch of different different creatures, small creatures, that little fish or little crabs or little, you know, sea urchins, and those can grow and they can proliferate, and then they can create a little ecosystem within that kelp forest. Except this is a synthetic ecosystem made of nano computers, which then create this whole body area network that basically turns the person into something between a transistor radio and a computer, and then eventually takes over their brain and their consciousness.
Dr. Corin, in your article, Alien Interference, you had questioned, if we were to conduct similar analysis of components of the COVID jab, might we discover similar frequency emissions from the alien implants? I'm not sure if they're similar frequency emissions. On a related note, however, in late 2020, a few videos online referenced a MAC address known to be broadcast from nanotech devices in the injection. One of the first videos, there was a man at a restaurant who noticed the TV near him would display a code when he walked near it. MAC stands for Media Access Control Address. It uniquely identifies the device and part of the network communication. There are now videos of people walking through cemeteries with Bluetooth scanner apps picking up broadcast transmission from the grave. There are also videos of people using Bluetooth apps on their phone to scan for unnamed MAC addresses in areas with lots of people milling about, showing multiple addresses popping up on the scanner. The implication is the scanner is picking up the broadcast from the nanotechnology inside the blood from the injection. Dr. Corin, what are your thoughts on the wider frame issue related to this dystopian phenomena?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, you know, the Bluetooth, the MAC address, obviously it doesn't just identify the person as a device, that would be the IP address. It localizes that person in space and in time, meaning they know where you, what you are, you belong to them, you're a device in their eyes, but also they know where you are at any time. So in other words, it's the Bluetooth is, you know, emitting a signal proximally, not distally, but with the satellite complex network, that MAC address is also readable remotely, meaning that everything that you do can be correlated with exactly where you are at any time, and that having those numbers associated with you to them identifies you as their property. I don't know how to emphasize this more strongly, that it's like with a social security number. It's not something on your behalf, it's on the behalf of the owner. And with the genetic manipulation, legally, if I can prove that I have changed your genome because I have introduced a patented sequence that's transected, meaning gone into your original DNA and added to it, therefore changing it somehow. Fundamentally, that means that because of intellectual copyright laws, I'm the patent holder, you belong to me henceforth, you're no longer a human. Bizarre that might sound. Therefore, they want to know where their stuff is. Right?
Right. And I did hear about how police could surreptitiously scan these Bluetooth signals and find a perpetrator or somebody in an area where a crime occurred and single you out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the least of it, because they, you know, now with the phased array optics and the black light, you know, the black lights, those purple and blue long wave dark lights started in Missouri in the States, and then it's gone many, many places. Those are basically scanners that can read fluorescent molecules that emit certain frequencies through quantum dot technology in persons who have that nanotechnology in them, particularly if they've had the jab. So they can identify as you're driving down the highway, because the light will emit that frequency, it'll scan you, and it will send a feedback loop to the server, and it'll be able to identify your vaccine status, for example. So in other words, that invasiveness of the technology is growing exponentially. Now, for example, with a Wi-Fi router that has LiDAR as your cell phone does, that LiDAR is a kind of a radar that is able to transduce through the emission of radio frequencies into the space where you are, your physical body and its location. It's analogous to the way whales or dolphins who don't see emit sonar, and they're able to see because their brains can translate the sonar into an image in their brains, and so that they can map things out. So that the technology that regular appliances through LiDAR are doing that. You know, so the exponential rise of invasive, privacy disrupting technology is going so fast and so, you know, everywhere.
We did have a guest on years ago talking about the wireless routers and how also in those environments where your living room is saturated with microwave radiation, they could monitor your breathing and heart rate and other bodily functions.
You know, that technology has been around at least since 1995, that remote sensing, privacy breaking ability to penetrate under the skin and read signals from inside, because they've been dispersing nano metamaterials covertly long before the COVID thing. But it's a lot worse than that, because it's not just picking up signals, it's inputting, you know, not output, it's input. Think of it like this, there's a receiver and there's an emitter, and then there's something called transceiver which does both. And that's the problem, really. The problem is that they can induce any type of pathology, meaning a cancer or diabetes or a stroke or anything they want to, through emitting a microwave, modulated microwave frequency to a person remotely, targeting them. That's what the Havana syndrome is. The Soviets have mastered that actually before the Americans. And in the States, you know, with the recent explosion in bioengineering, it's been fine-tuned in certain directions. But it's basically that you don't need to have a pathogen in the sense of a biological or chemical molecular thing. And the person doesn't have to be in the same space. You can microwave them across the planet. The Soviets were able to do this decades ago. And now with all the metamaterials, all the smart dust and all the nanotechnology that's in the environment, regardless of whether you've had the jab or the boost or whatever, because it penetrates the skin, it's nano, it's that means atomic level size, you know, so it's basically ubiquitous. So that means that the hardware, the nano hardware, the receptor is in there, and it's linked, it can read genetic specificity. But the thing is, this is so gruesome and so dystopian, and I'm not into disempowerment at all, I'm not into doom and gloom, I'm actually into the contrary. My whole thing is let's name the beast, let's look at the science, let's talk about it, but let's not freak out. Let's figure out what their weak links are, what they're not understanding, what we're not recognizing about our own power, both scientifically and spiritually, energetically speaking, and let's regroup and let's build from there. And I just want to say that because I don't think living in fear is a good thing, and I don't think predictive programming is a good thing. And I think that a lot of stuff that they're doing, however advanced it is technically, is also kind of, they don't understand everything about how life is or how energy is, at least on my, and I work with bioenergetics, you know, therapeutically. So I'm just speaking from a position of some more information than the regular person has about how biophysics works.
Mm. Well, Dr. Korn, you work with patients to create antidotes for this type of magnetic and electrical interference. A friend had written to me about your alien interference article, specifically about the magnetizing of the body after getting a COVID injection, and with Dr. Lear's patients experiencing magnetizing of non-metal objects in their homes. My friend writes, it's also interesting to recall Reich's experimental conclusions regarding magnetism, that it may simply be the reaction of orgone to certain substances, particularly metals. But he showed that concentrated orgone can actually repel magnetism, as was demonstrated with an iron sphere charged with orgone, which then repelled all metals, but attracted organic substances such as cork or cotton or wool. He concluded in the Cancer Biopathy book, quote, the probability is that magnetism itself will prove to be a particular function of cosmic orgone energy. Hence, my friend writes, another clue to a possible antidote to this invasive technology. There's also an interesting book out there titled Shape Energy, which reveals how simple geometric forms conduct or concentrate etheric energies in particular ways. Dr. Korn, could you talk more about this concept and ways that you counter the electrical and magnetic field interference from this nanotech in the body?
Okay, so we talk about Reich, and we have to talk about James Clerk Maxwell, who is the forefather of electromagnetism. Let's start with Maxwell, because he actually had field theory, which was then kind of put aside in science. And Maxwell originally determined that gravity was a byproduct of electromagnetic forces, electrogravitation. So there's a relationship that you don't find in the standard model of physics between gravity, gravitational force, and electromagnetic force, of which magnetism is a part, because electricity and magnetism go together. No, you can't really separate them from each other. What Reich was talking about was orgone, which is something which is much closer to life force, you know, the idea that the cosmos has this fundamental energy that's also emotional and spiritual and exuberant and super positive. And its super positivity has a shadow side, the negative energy, which is aims to kind of entrap and block the positive force of the organ. So organ is not just energy in a typical scientific sense, more than that. And that's why they were afraid of Reich, and why they suppressed Reich and basically crucified him, destroyed him, because he's talking about something, a spiritual, organic, it's like the lifeblood of things on an energetic level. So for that, of course, magnetism is just a byproduct of the fundamental source energy. Now, with electromagnetism, gravity, actually going back to this horrible threat to our species, the graphene is what's called diamagnetic. That means it, you know how there are all those videos of people with magnets sticking to their deltoid, or even their iPhones sticking to their arms or their bodies, right? Yeah. Actually, you might think, okay, that's because the metal is stuck in, there's a electromagnetic implant in that local area, and it's causing the thing to stick to it. Actually, no, it's actually going in the other direction. You know, the magnet or the phone is sticking to the skin because the interaction between that and the implanted graphene is stimulating the graphene to speed up and go towards the brain away from the muscle. Not many people realize that the charge and the movement physically of graphene through the hydrogel infrastructure is away from an electromagnetic propulsion source. So if even you put a simple magnet on the skin, it actually is increasing the movement of the graphene to grow and to go towards the heart and towards the brain. Right, so in terms of antidoting this, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. So if you like, I mean, because I want to know what can we do about all this stuff?
Absolutely.
All right, and what frustrates, not the right word, but what I find a bit limited about the approaches people are recommending are they're fundamentally biochemical. Let's clean out the blood using EDTA to chelate it, you know, or some other substance that's fundamentally acting on a biochemical level to dredge out stuff that shouldn't be in there or to connect with it biochemically to reduce the amount, you know, taking NAC or something to help degrade it. When what we're looking at here is whether it has an ET connection or it's just very advanced pathological technology that humans have developed. It doesn't really matter, but it's fundamentally working with movement of energy in the body, not matter. That's very secondary. So we have to think about what can we do to protect ourselves against the damaging effect of these energies, or these interference materials that are capable of messing with our electromagnetic circuitry. Is there something in us that we can activate that will buffer against this or protect against this endogenously within us, right? Is there something that we can do other than taking a substance to help to physically reduce the amount of toxic material in the blood? And that's where, you know, you asked me about shape, a book about shape, and you asked me in that email about, you mentioned the Reich. So with Reich, let's just talk a little bit about Reich. So Reich, you know, with organite, which is a material composed of copper coils and different crystals, amethyst, etc., in a pyramidal form, some people have made those very effectively, and they've been able to remove chemtrails from above their neighborhood. And because the energy emitted from the large organized structure breaks up the energy, the toxic energy that has to do with all the metamaterials in the environment and in the artificial clouds generated by the chemtrails, and they're producing the Morgellons like fibers, etc., etc. So when you're talking about very high energy emissions at a frequency, not frequent, a vibration, different than frequent, a vibration is a higher octave of energy, meaning in a sense more spiritual, more fundamentally close to the cosmos than the way that we use in our appliances. We have to think differently. We have to think about gradations, octave, vibratory levels or dimensions of energy if we're going to be able to have protection against these trillions of nanomaterials and nanorobots that are just going everywhere. So my point there is, we need to think not just in physical terms, biochemical terms, energetic terms. So going back to the ancient Egyptians, that understanding about how shapes work to alter the scalar waves and the local frequencies and induce positive effects was very well understood and very well researched. And that knowledge has been transmitted into the modern practice of biogeometry by an Egyptian architect scholar who has a whole practice based on biogeometry. And then out of Germany, there's a very user-friendly methodology. I'm not saying it's a silver bullet, but it's working with certain simple external antenna arrays that anybody can compose with straight lines or that you draw on your body, like a temporary tattoo or on a piece of paper, or you put it onto your wall. And these simple geometrical glyphs, drawings, function as filters or blockers or diversion antennae for these incoming negative predatory frequencies that otherwise will go through your biofield and enter into your cellular body. So the point is then that there are methods that don't cost hardly anything that people can learn, the effect of which is to generate a field effect in their dwelling then that reduces the nefarious effect of those incoming, what's called centric warfare frequencies. So you might have that all that overload of metamaterials, but if it's not triggered into action to damage you or to kill you because you've got these filters that are working with electromagnetic and scalar energies to kind of reduce the bombardment, then you have a protective system that you can utilize. And most importantly, I just want to add, is that the way that we think, if we upregulate our mind, and if we think not just in a everyday way, but if we align our thinking in a more fundamentally focused way towards questions, what is the purpose of life? You know, what does it mean to be alive? What is this universe? These childlike but deep, unanswerable but questions which stimulate wonder, okay, in the person, that itself creates a kind of force field infusing into the body. And it may not be 100% protective against negativity, but it certainly has a powerful effect. So what I'm trying to encourage in people is, don't go into fear, don't go into overwhelm, don't go into there's no way out of this, gloom and dooming. No, let's not do that. Let's really be open to learning about things that maybe most people haven't even heard of. And don't be afraid to look at the science and learn more about it, because the more you understand what's going on, little by little, you know, absorb it, the more power you have to counteract it. It's when you don't know anything, you feel completely vulnerable, because it seems like they're so much smarter than I am, there's so much more of them than me, and they, you know, they're funded by gazillionaires, and what little me, what the hell can I do? That's a very unfortunate state of mind to be in. So the state of the mind is something they don't understand. I think they underestimate the power of the human being, that when that human being's in a spiritually and mentally strong state, they completely underestimate that. So that's really it. With the cleansing of the blood, I think chlorine dioxide is the way to go. And I teach that, and I'm going to have a whole new platform called the DeoxyTube, and I'll have a channel on there, and people can learn that. That's the most cost-effective and the most effective way to remove the nanostructures from the blood and keep the blood as healthy as can be and the cells as healthy as can be, and to upregulate the electromagnetics in the body. And then, you know, there are these special resonant micro antennae that you can generate just with a pen and paper. And then there's the organite. There's the work that I do with the remote healing, which is extremely effective. And there's this training, if you like, to become like a truth warrior and not be afraid, and then upregulate your resistance by understanding the power of the frequencies of the mind. The mind of the matter is very powerful. Okay, so I'm trying to not just wake people up to the bad stuff, I'm trying to rouse people to the potential of the good stuff that they can access and generate within.
Switching to another great article on your Substack account titled Blood Wars, you cover a range of issues such as the current state of the blood banks, the larger philosophical meaning of injecting people with trillions of self-replicating nanobots, and you write, quote, "This is a war on blood. And the article focuses on how to protect your blood from contamination and infiltration. By infiltration, I mean invasion. Transhumanist components are continuously uploaded via shots, swabs, air, food, and water, and person-to-person shedding. Would you please tell listeners more about the many facets and intentions of the biotech surreptitiously added to our blood?
Yes, let me just begin by addressing the question you had emailed to me about neuromodulation and depopulation, because those are the two clarifying lenses, the lenses we can use to see this clearly. So depopulation means culling the numbers of people on the planet. Neuromodulation means taking over your brain, turning you into a post-human, basically cyborg, controlling your consciousness. And so the blood is the vehicle for depopulation, because you can use the hydrogel to create those white clots, and you can easily cause hypoxia in the heart or the brain. The person is going to die suddenly. So the blood is also the conduit for the graphenated nanomaterials to take over the nerve bodies, both peripheral and central, in the spinal cord and the brain, because the blood is like the carrier system. So the blood is necessary to be used for two complementary but different purposes. One is to kill and one is to control, right? So that means that they have two parts of the agenda, is to downsize the number of people on the planet and to make the rest of them into cyborg slaves. We know this by now. So people need to get really clear about that. Now, I think I just want to add that the obvious occult practices that are going on in technology, not just in behind the scenes with satanic stuff, but actually in technology. For example, graphene is technically referred to as a magic material, and I can give you many other examples. So that there's a sense that within the science that we're dealing with something that's kind of like magic, literally. In black magic, there's a saying that's fundamental, that whoever controls the blood of somebody controls the soul of that person. So the blood is also a prerequisite. Controlling the blood, infesting the blood with your presence to control the mind and the soul of that person. So now we have to come to the question of, okay, how does this get into me if I haven't been, you know, haven't got had the arm puncture? Unfortunately, it can, maybe not to the same concentrated degree that having it inserted with a syringe, but the dark field microscopy reports, particularly from Dr. Mihalsia, and some other places, seem to be indicating that none of us is immune to this. But what I'd like to say is that we need to be careful with those types of reports, because if they're true, they're still based on small samples. And I think it's not scientifically appropriate to extrapolate big inferences from small samples. So what I would like to say to people is probably none of us has a pure blood. None of us today is without these nanorobots inside. It's infiltrated, infected, invaded all of us, and that these nanorobots and nanomaterials are intrinsically AI. They don't need encryption. They don't need to be remote controlled. They have, even at an atomic size, nanometer size, they have the capability of making individual and collective decisions. Okay, so what's the defense against that? The defense against that is you have to realize that you have a mind that has a very powerful emitter, not only around you, but inside you. And you have to use that thing. You have to fire up your mind and say, wait a minute, this mind's not just to, you know, read stock market reports or the sports results or whatever. Not this mind is a fire. All right, it's a burning fire and it burns garbage. It converts it into good things because of intelligence. So that my point is that what I'm trying to tell people is you have a brain, you need to use it. And in the brain, you have thoughts and you need to use them. You need to use them strongly because your immune system against this threat depends on your capability to not be in fear, but to be in power. And power is ultimately from consciousness, right? So the best defense is to not freak out, accept, and then say, wait a minute, I'm not going to let myself be taken over. I have something inside me that can meet this thing. And that's my soul, that's my spirit, and that's my analytical mind as well. And that team is a dream team, and I should invest in that. I shouldn't invest in being swept along with predictive programming or fear based on all of these reports of all this overwhelming nefarious technology, because that's exactly what they want you to do. The population's already traumatized. People are already traumatized psychologically for all sorts of reasons. The whole COVID thing was designed to deeply traumatize everybody. More anxiety. It's all MKUltra, CIA stuff to make you weaker at your core. And then your resistance goes down. So you have to understand that, I mean, the person has to understand that that's the wrong way to go. Right? The way to go is to muscle up at a soul level and to use the mind as the antidote to artificial intelligence.
You had mentioned, Dr. Corin, in a post about EDTA IVs. Please tell listeners about this treatment and others that can help remove the nanotechnology out of the blood.
EDTA, yes, so EDTA, okay, EDTA has been successfully used by Dr. Anna Michalsi in her clinic, and showing that there's a remediation of the through dark field of the contaminants, the hydrogel, the graphenated structures in the vasculature, and that the red blood cells look healthy after having treatment, but IV EDTA is expensive, it's invasive, and you have to do a whole bunch of them, and you have to go somewhere to have it done. Whereas a chlorine dioxide solution, which I know a lot about, and it can be used for a very wide range of illnesses and physical problems at home by people, not just for dealing with nanotechnology, but by combusting using the fire of oxygen and electron currents associated with that in the body that will help to remove pathologies from the body. And that's a very user-friendly and inexpensive procedure that anybody in the world can do without going anywhere, you know? And so that reason that I'm recommending CDS is not just that that's my training, that's my area of expertise, but that it's also available to everybody without... I'm not saying don't go to have IV EDTA. I'm saying it will cost you. You'll have to go for a lot, you know, have to go have it done in a clinic, and you'll have to go have it done again and again and again. Even if your blood is clean after a sequence of treatments, that doesn't mean that you're not vulnerable to getting contaminated again and again and again. So it doesn't mean to say that that's not a good thing to do. It just means to say that there are pros and cons with different protocols, and people may be not aware that with chlorine dioxide solution, which is very much suppressed in the United States, in fact, it's criminalized. That already tells me something, because if you don't criminalize EDTA, but you criminalize CDS, that means they're more afraid of CDS than they are of EDTA. But with CDS, it's something that people can learn to self-administer.
Dr. Corin, how can listeners learn more about the work that you do with chlorine dioxide?
Well, they can contact me, directly through my website, if they want learn about webinars and teaching, they can find information through the Kalka Institute. Andreas Kalka is the father of chlorine dioxide therapeutics. So the Kalka Institute or andreaskalka.com, you can find information there. There's also a new completely independent platform that has just been produced, which is still restricted to practitioners and professionals, called DioxyTube, but that will become soon a kind of equivalent to YouTube for people who want to learn about this so-called universal antidote, which is already being used by probably 10 million people across the world outside of the US. So if you want to find out, they can either look at, you know, go to andreaskalka.com, andreaskalker.com, start there. Or, you know, if they want to contact me, they can use the contact form. My website's just nicholascorin.com, nicholascorin.com. Also, on the Substack, I'll be, you know, gradually introducing more information about therapeutics, of which would include the utilization of CDS for those people who want to learn more.
Excellent. Excellent, Dr. Corin. And I just want to mention to listeners, I'll have those links on inothernewsradio.com as well. Dr. Corin, your work is remarkable. Your articles on this material is very important to read and learn about. And the treatment that you're doing is absolutely necessary. And thank you so much for stepping up at this time. We need more doctors like yourself doing what you're doing. And I so appreciate you joining me here on In Other News.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and I actually want to acknowledge you for reaching out to me and inviting me, because I think this is such crucial and helpful information for listening public, and it's great to get it out there. And anytime you want to, you know, ask some more information about all of this, then we can just set up another interview. I'd be delighted to do that.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.